Well, greetings, everyone. This is part two of the series of talks I'm giving on marriage preparation. Now, these talks are geared specifically toward those who are currently preparing for marriage. You may be a young couple who is getting married in a month or six months or a year or so, and you're looking forward to that wedding day. But this teaching is going to help you not only for the wedding day, but for your married life. Now, before I launch into this, I just want to remind you that I'm drawing a lot of these teachings from the Catechism of the Catholic Church. Now that book, the Catechism of the Catholic Church, is an awesome book, and you really need to have one. If you want to give yourselves a good gift for your wedding day, get a copy of the Catechism of the Catholic Church and read the section on matrimony. Those teachings in there, in that whole section, are so beautiful, and I can guarantee you they will help you in living your new married life. Now, this talk I'm going to focus specifically right now on the grace of the sacrament of matrimony. Christ the Lord entrusted to his church seven sacraments. Matrimony is one of them. The sacraments are the means by which Christ communicates to us the gift of salvation, by which he saves us from sin and all evil, the means by which he shares his life with us. And each of the sacraments have their own special graces. And here are some of the graces of matrimony. These graces are there. You just have to accept them. You both have to accept them. Okay, one of the graces is this. This sacrament will perfect the couple's love. So you love one another. That has moved you to want to spend your life together, to be married. And love, if it's real, is going to grow. Love can't just stay at a certain level. It has to grow. Well, remember, in the Bible, it says that God is love. So perfect love is God himself. So this sacrament is going to make your love more perfect. It's going to move you more and more towards the love of God within your marriage. This sacrament will lift your love up. And so even in difficult times, there is a power in this sacrament to keep that love strong. Next, this sacrament strengthens the unity of husband and wife. Now, unity is one of the essential marks of married life. The two become one. It's as if they are so one that we cannot think of the husband without thinking of his wife. There's such a unity there. Well, unity is something that's going to be challenged throughout life. There's going to be so many temptations towards division. Well, the grace of this sacrament will strengthen your unity. The Catechism says this: by the grace of this sacrament, the couple help one another to attain holiness in their married life and in welcoming and educating their children. So marriage helps you, the sacrament helps you towards holiness, holiness in your married life. This means in a way that marriage is your path of following Christ, of following the Lord. And holiness is very important. There is a grace to help you to attain holiness. Now, I'll talk in a few moments about welcoming and educating children. Another grace of this sacrament is the fact that Christ dwells with you in this sacrament. He really is. He's there as your friend. I sometimes tell people, I say, how many persons does it take to make a good marriage? And they'll say, well, Father, that's easy, two, husband and wife. And I say, no, five. And then they say, five? Father, you can't say that. And I say, well, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, husband and wife. Well, in this sacrament, the Lord Jesus is with you. In this sacrament, Christ is with you. He strengthens you to take up your cross and follow Jesus. So the cross is always present. There's going to be some cross that comes into your marriage. It could be something little or something big. But if both of you are following Christ, he's going to give you a grace to take up that cross, to go on in your married life, in your married love. How many crosses have been carried by married couples and they've persevered in their love for one another? And that grace comes from Christ himself. Christ will strengthen you. He will help you to rise again after you have fallen. So what does that mean, to fall? Well, it could mean anything. It could mean a disagreement. It could mean a very big argument. It could be some miscommunication or a period of misunderstanding. Well, if you turn back to Christ, He's going to lift you back up, to bring you back to that level of unity and love. Christ is with you in this sacrament of matrimony to help you to forgive one another. Now, forgiveness is a very important part of love. Forgiveness means I love the person more than I recognize the wrong that they did. I love the person more than I want to reject them because of what they did. All right, so forgiveness, you know, one of the requirements of forgiveness is someone's got to do something to hurt you. Someone's got to let you down or fail you. Without forgiveness, no marriage can last, because none of us are perfect. Man, you're about to marry a woman who is not perfect. Woman, you're about to marry a man who's not perfect. So forgiveness is going to help you to move through all that. Christ helps you to forgive one another. When you get married, remember that you have to be forgiving to each other. Also in this sacrament, Christ will strengthen you to bear one another's burdens. Now, since neither one of you are perfect, you have some kind of burden you bring to the relationship. It's not the only thing about you, but it's part of life. It's part of your imperfections and everyone's imperfection. To bear one another's burdens. Again, it's kind of like that forgiveness. It means I love the person more than I can't stand the burden that I have to carry. What could be the burdens? It could be sickness. What if one of you gets very sick, and now the other person has to take care of that person, the sick person, has to go bring them to the doctor, has to make visits to the hospital? It's a burden, to be sure, but with Christ, He's going to give you a strength to see that not as a burden, but as an opportunity to love. All right, so we have these graces that are there in the sacrament of matrimony, and they are there. They are. It's important for the husband and wife to live the faith, to be open to these graces. You know, one of the things that is really important is that we live a holy life, because when we live a life of grace, when we follow Christ, then His graces and blessings can flow freely into our lives. But if we don't have faith, if we never pray, if we live in sin, then it's like we're blocking that grace. It's like we're not allowing these graces to affect our lives, to be fruitful. So these graces are there. Now, the Catechism goes into talking about the unity and indissolubility of marriage. Unity. The unity of husband and wife is total. It's a complete unity. It's a unity of bodies, of feelings, and of the will. In other words, it's a personal unity. When a man marries a woman, he gives his entire person to the other person. The two persons give their entire lives to each other. It's a union of body and soul. That's why separation is so painful. It could be the separation of one has to go on a business trip. There's a separation there. There's a kind of separation. It's very painful. It's because the unity is a personal unity. It could be the separation of something very serious, where you actually separate from one another. You know, even when couples have been in a great battle with one another and they decide to separate for a time, maybe permanently, it's still painful because of that personal unity. It's kind of like, if I have to cut my arm off, it's going to be painful. Even if my arm has to be amputated or something, it's going to be very painful because the unity between my arm and the rest of my body is so strong and so present a reality. So marriage is a complete unity. And because of that, it needs to be seen as indissoluble. That's one of the words I have a hard time pronouncing. Permanent. It cannot be dissolved. A valid marriage cannot be dissolved. It's there. All right, so this personal unity, when you understand this, when you really accept it, it doesn't come across as a burden, but as a gift. When you totally give yourself to marriage, then you're actually free. But if you go back to this idea of, yeah, I'm married, but my marriage is trying to take me away from the life I really want to live, then something's not quite in line there. You want to see that you are entering a personal, that is, your entire person, your entire life, a personal unity. You're giving yourself to the other and to each other. Therefore, you are entering an institution, a reality, a relationship that is permanent and indissoluble. The Catechism also talks about the need for husband and wife to have an openness to fertility. Now, fertility is a gift from God. It's not something that's bad. It's a gift from the Lord. To quote the Catechism, it says this: by its very nature, the institution of marriage and married love is ordered to the procreation and education of the offspring, and it is in them that it finds its crowning glory. Children are the supreme gift of marriage. That's what the Catechism says. They're a supreme gift, not a problem. Yes, burdensome. They have a million burdens they bring into this world, but that's not what they are. They're a gift, the supreme gift of marriage, the crowning glory of marriage. You want to see children as a gift. The problem, though, is that when you have children, your identity changes. You don't just have a child you have to take care of, but now you're a mom or a dad. And that's an identity that's going to be forever, but it's totally new for you. And it can be a very difficult transition. But if you see children as good, as a supreme gift, then that will help you in taking on this new role for the rest of your lives. Children are a fruit of your love for each other and a fruit of your cooperation with God's creative love. Now, this is amazing when you think about it, that when you have children, you have cooperated with the power of God, the Creator, who creates them. And what creates them is His love. So there we have that again, that aspect of your love united to the love of God. Now, this leads to a consideration about human sexuality, which itself is another gift from God. It's not bad, it's good. Human sexuality is a gift from God, created by Him for man and woman, for their unity and the continuation of the human race. It is not simply a biological reality, but an integral part of the love by which a man and a woman commit themselves to each other. So here we have love again. Love is at the heart of marriage. You see that love is present in all parts of marriage when you're preparing to get married, in the whole reality of caring for one another, and now also in the gift of human sexuality. Now, since marriage and human sexuality is from God, it ought to be lived, in fact, must be lived, in according to His design. And you want to stay away from any deviation from the plan of God. When you have something that is so powerful from the Lord, a powerful force, you need to have wisdom with it. And the teachings of Christ and the Church help us in living the gifts of God with true wisdom. Now, I'm going to tell you a story. It may sound like I'm going off the track here, but it fits in perfectly to what this topic is about. A number of years ago, I was in a bar room, and I was dressed like this, and I was on a mission. I was there to give a talk at something called Theology on Tap. We had a Life Teen youth group in our parish, which was a wonderful organization in the parish, still is, and they would, every now and then, they would rent a bar room, like a space in the bar room, and the young adults would go there, and they'd have talks on theology. They'd bring in some speaker, and they'd have to give some important, relevant talk about something that can really fire the people up. Then they would take question and answers. So they asked me one day to give one of these talks, and I said, sure, I'd love to do that. I remember a story about St. Louis de Montfort. They said he used to go into the bar rooms and he would take the beer kegs and he would smash them on the ground and he would grab all the drinkers and say, you got to convert. And I was hoping I could do something like that. But anyway, they said, your topic is social justice and martyrdom. Social justice and martyrdom. Now, social justice would be easy to talk about. You can talk about human rights. I can talk about the right to life. I can talk about, you know, workers' rights. It's a very easy topic to speak of, and also very relevant. There's so many issues, practical issues we could discuss in modern day life. And martyrdom. Now, martyrdom is when you die for your faith. It's the supreme witness to Christ, when you lay down your life because of your devotion to Christ. Someone tells you to renounce Christ, or you're dead, and you say, nope, I will not renounce Christ. So I could talk about that. I could talk about the history of martyrdom in the church and the present day reality, which is going on all over the world. But I couldn't figure out, how do I connect social justice and martyrdom? And then I began to think, maybe this is God's providence. Maybe he's telling me that when I speak about social justice in this bar room, that I'm going to say something controversial and someone ain't going to like it and I'm going to die. And that's the end. I'm going to be martyred in a bar room. So I prepared the talk and I was able to weave together a bit of these two realities, social justice and martyrdom. But as a contingency plan, I got a security team. I had these two friends who I know to this day who were graduates of boot camp in the military, and I said, you guys are my security. You're going to the talk at this bar room, and you're going to be my security. And I said, your mission is when I finish the talk and when I finish the question and answer period, your mission is to get me out of the bar room and fast. Don't let me mingle. Just get me out. And they said, yes, sir, we're ready. So I give the talk. I talked for about 45 minutes. Then I had a really good question answer period. It was really good. And there was probably, I want to say, about close to 50 young adult college-age people in this bar room asking questions and going to the talk. Time to leave. I'm walking out, and my security team, these two young men, two of them were in front of me, and I was behind them. Not a good security formation. They're walking this way to get out, and I'm just following them. So as I'm walking, all of a sudden, a woman who was pretty much exactly my height, because I remember her eyes hitting my eyes, she jumped in between my security team and me. And she ain't moving. And she's just standing there looking at me. Meanwhile, I can see in my peripheral vision that my security team doesn't know what's going on, and they keep walking fast to get me out, but they're the only ones leaving. I'm still stuck here now. Not going to hire them again. So the woman says, Father. And I said, yes. She said, I work here at this bar room, and I was not going to go to your talk. I just came upstairs to put some glasses away, and I heard some of the things you were saying, and I was really interested, and so I stayed. And I said, okay, well, nice to meet you. And then she said, but I have a problem. And I said, what's that? And she says, I do not agree with the Catholic Church's teaching on artificial contraception. And then my heart sank. Do you know how you have those moments in life when, in the space of 1 second, you can think a million thoughts? I began to think, first of all, poor security team. Second of all, I said, why does she have to ask this question? Why couldn't she ask something like, Father, I don't agree with the church's teaching on the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, or on the Trinity, or on the priesthood, or on the role of the Pope, or something like that. Those questions can be answered in kind of a dry, scientific fashion. But she didn't ask those. She asked, I don't agree with the church's teaching on artificial contraception, which can be a controversial issue. It can be a hot-button issue. It could be a personal issue for her or people she knows. So I'm like, here comes my martyrdom. Here it is. But at the same time, I thought, this woman deserves an answer. And she doesn't deserve an answer of, well, the church teaches that, and if you don't accept it, you're no good. That's not the right answer. The answer has to be something that is really wise and really useful and really respectful of the person who asked the question. So, meanwhile, my security team was long gone. I think they were out. I think they actually left. All right. So I'm looking at this woman, and I said to her, now, by the way, I had no idea what I was going to say, because my mind wasn't geared up for talking about the church's teaching on human sexuality and artificial contraception. I was thinking about social justice and martyrdom. I could have given my talk from memory because I had rehearsed it so much. Well, I have no idea what I'm going to say to her. And I look at her and I say, "Well, ma'am, do you think that human sexuality is about love?" And she said, "Yes." And then I said, "Do you agree that within marriage there are many expressions of love? You know, such as spending time together, caring for each other, helping each other with things?" And she said, "Yes." And then I said, by the way, I didn't know where I was going with this. I interiorly was like, "Holy Spirit, please inspire me." And then I said, "Would you agree that sexuality is a high point of the expression of the sharing of the love of husband and wife?" And she said, "Yes." And then I said, "Would you think that in sexuality there is an unspoken communication between husband and wife, and that unspoken communication is, I love you totally? That's the message that's communicated in human sexuality." And she said, "Yes." Now at this point, I could tell she was paying attention to me. Now one of the problems of being a teacher of the faith or a preacher is that when you're preaching, if people are not paying attention to you, you feel a little bit annoyed by that. You feel like it's disrespectful. But if they are paying attention to you, you feel like you're under the microscope and they're analyzing every word you say. So you really can't win. It's a really uncomfortable thing. So she's paying attention to me. And I can tell she's listening to every single word I was saying. So I was feeling a little bit uneasy because I was like, I hope I got something here. All right, so I had all these points established. Sexuality is about love. There are many expressions of love within marriage, but sexuality is the high point of that expression and sharing of love of husband and wife. And in sexuality, there is an unspoken communication. It's like a language of the body. The message communicated is, I love you totally. And then I said this. I said, you know, love to be real needs to have two essential parts to it. The first part of this love is, I take you completely to myself. Okay, I want to have you. I take you completely to myself. All of the love songs are about this. I want you in my life. I got to have you in my life. Things like that. That's the first part. But if you only have that part in love, then love can become abusive really quickly. It can become possessive. I want you in my life. I need to have you. So I have you as my possession. That's not real love, okay? For love to be real, you need to have this other part, and it is, I give myself completely to you, okay? So I want you, I take you to myself, and I give myself completely to you. And she says, yes, that's very interesting, Father. And I said, the language of human sexuality in marriage is this love. I take you completely to myself. I give myself completely to you. That's what's being spoken at the high point of the expression of love between husband and wife in human sexuality. And then I said, but with artificial contraception, you introduce a subtle lie into the high point of the communication of love. The subtle lie is, I take you completely to myself. I give myself completely to you. But not really. It's not a full communication of love. Now, God's plan for sexuality, which is based on nature, is not to be frustrated. It's not to be exchanged for our own plan. Because if it is, then we begin to thwart that communication of love. With artificial contraception, sexuality is no longer based on the fullness of love. Now, this is the high point of the expression of the heart of marriage, which is love. And at that high point expression, it's like you're attacking it with a very subtle lie. Now, you're not bad people. You're not intending anything evil. You're not intending to go against your love. But subtly, that's what's happening. And even worse, the husband and wife begin to use each other as objects of pleasure. And do you know something? Do you know what the opposite of love is? It's not hate. It's using people. It's using people. We can understand this. When people use us, even family members or other loved ones, when they start to use us, when they don't respect our full humanity and dignity, we feel hurt tremendously. We feel like we've been trampled upon. Well, artificial contraception, at the high point of that love, turns it into using one another, simply as objects of pleasure. And that's the opposite of love. And one has to wonder if artificial contraception can be a subtle erosion to the love which is at the heart of marriage. Someone in this situation would be moving against love and doing so in the name of love, towards using one another as objects of pleasure. And using the language of sexuality that communicates love, but tarnishing that love with using one another. Well, this woman in the barroom, she said something like, "Father, I've never heard this presented this way. This is amazing. You give me a lot to think about." She told me that she still didn't agree with the church's teaching, but she said she's going to think about this more and more. Now, I don't know what happened after that. Eventually, we parted ways. My security team was on the other side of the street. They were wondering what happened to you. So don't hire that team for security. But you know, that conversation I had, I will never forget it. It was in a bar room that I came to. This sounds kind of funny, doesn't it? A priest in the bar room finds the best way to express the church's teaching on artificial contraception, that it's a thwarting of human love. Well, think about this finally, that marriage is about love. That's the heart of your marriage, the very center of your friendship, your married friendship and love. And you want to guard that love, and you want that love to be enshrined in wisdom. Love and wisdom are other names for the eternal God. He is the wisdom. He is eternal wisdom and eternal love. The fullness of true love is revealed in Christ Jesus the Lord, and He is with you. And always keep in mind that real love connects you to God's love, which is perfect. And so as you prepare for your wedding day and you prepare for your marriage, think about how important love is. It's the heart of your marriage. Guard it, protect it, honor it, and live it. God bless you.